Hello, my name is Ben.
And I'm Nora.
And we are your hosts of the Too Vague podcast this week. We've got a departure show, a Frankenstein monster, if you will.
Are you calling me a monster?
No, I'm not. I'm calling the show a monster. We've got Nora with us in the home studio.
Yes, here in Tucson.
How was your stay in Tucson?
It's okay.
There isn't anyone you know listening, so you can share with us.
I kind of want to go to the book fair that's happening this week.
Oh, the Tucson Festival of Books.
Yeah, except it's so hard to park.
Yeah.
As some of us know, I'm injured right now. And so it's hard for me to get around, even though it's my shoulder that's injured.
Right.
Whatever. I dislocated my shoulder in the winter in Chicago, and they put it back together.
Right. They located it.
Yeah.
Right. And then now it's relocated.
Yes. But it's taking so long for it to heal.
Even for me, into my 50s now, but it's, you know, same thing. It's like it takes longer for things to heal that would normally feel like they healed pretty quickly. Right.
So I'm enjoying my time with my nephew here in Tucson.
Yeah. I hear that guy's kind of a jerk.
No. He's a really nice guy. I defend him all the time.
Well, gee, thank you. I appreciate it. We played a couple games, one of which we're going to talk about after a very special interview that I had last week with the social media manager and co-host of the Land Parties podcast for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Lucas Egan. Please enjoy. We have a guest today. Our guest is a University of Nevada, Reno journalism graduate, a social media manager and co-host of the Land Parties podcast for the Las Vegas Review Journal, gamer, Vegas Golden Knights fan, creator of the forthcoming video game industry periodical Game On, and all-around good guy, Lucas Egan. So, hi, Lucas. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be on. And yes, I am definitely a Golden Knights fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Golden Knights, they're good.
They are. You know, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. So hopefully we can make another deep run this year. And, you know, they were our first expansion team, because like obviously the Aces with the WNBA were in San Antonio, obviously the Raiders were in Oakland, so like the Knights really are Vegas's team. Like, this is the one that we built from the ground up.
Yeah, that's great. Is the Kraken, are they this year or next year for Seattle? Right, it's Seattle Kraken.
I believe they started last year, actually. So it's fun to see the NHL expanding. I honestly wasn't a big hockey fan before the Knights game, but boy, is it exciting.
I am from Chicago originally, so by virtue of that alone, I am a Blackhawks fan and always will be a Blackhawks fan. So whenever the Blackhawks are in the playoffs, I'm always watching. I'm more of a fair weather sort of fan. What are you playing now, and what's coming up that you're looking forward to playing on your backlog or whatever?
My kind of go-to when I've got some free time, when I'm out and about, game is still Marvel Snap. I've always been a card game fan, so that game was right up my alley, and it is a great time killer, probably too good of a time killer. Pokemon's my favorite series, so in honor of Pokemon Day, I was revisiting Pokemon Legends.
Okay.
Given the announcements that they just made, so I am super pumped for that. I recently played some Alan Wake 2 and finally finished up the campaign on that, and loved it. Loved the risks they were taking. I thought that was a super ambitious game. Looking ahead, oh boy, this is kind of a weird year.
Yeah.
You know, I guess technically it's going to be out when this episode airs. I'm super ready to dive into Final Fantasy again.
Nice.
Hopefully that lives up to the hype. I'm sure it will.
I've heard the ladies talk about it on What's Good Games, and they seem very impressed. Even Andrea, who's not really a big Final Fantasy, just dipped her toes into it somewhat recently with the last remake. But Brett is definitely very, very excited about it. You know the ladies over at What's Good Games?
I do listen to them. They do a great job.
Pal World, yes or no? You being a fan of
I have not played it. I'm admittedly curious. I've watched some gameplay. It looks interesting to me. I mean, I'll leave it at that. It looks interesting.
Okay, so you're going to reserve judgment until you actually play it, if you actually play it.
Yes.
Right now, I am finishing up Scarlet Nexus. I've got probably about another 20 hours left in that. And then I am a Vanillaware fan. Let me just tell you that right away. Even though I make fun of Unicorn Overlord as a title, which just seems weird to me. But I am really excited. I downloaded the demo and I played about an hour and a half of that. And based on the strength of that, boy, just pre-ordered it right away. So I am excited about the full release coming out. I think it's in a couple of weeks. That's what's next. And then when Hi-Fi Rush is released for the PlayStation 5, that's also on the queue. So those are the next two games I'm probably going to play. Okay, so do you remember when you got your very first review code for a game?
I do.
What was the game, if you don't mind me asking?
So it was in 2020, because LAN parties had just started that year. It was for Marvel's Avengers.
Oh, okay. A bittersweet first.
It was. I wanted to like that game so much. I really did.
Yeah.
I really did. And I think deep down in that game, there was a great story-driven game to be had there. It was just all everything else that brought it down.
Have you played any of the Kill the Justice League at all?
I have not yet. You know, in the lead up to release, I just, for some reason, wasn't excited. I am sad that Warner Brothers came out with that statement saying that it didn't meet expectations. I mean, I think what I want studios to know, learn, is that, my goodness, these live service games are not what most gamers want for most of these titles.
And, right. It's know your audience.
Right. And it just seems like from some of the reactions I've been seeing, it seems like it might be a similar thing where there's a really good story and there's a really good narrative-driven story game to be had somewhere in there.
Right.
And it just looks like some of this extra live service stuff is just not connecting.
Yeah. When you dissect it, this game didn't meet our expectations. Does that mean, oh, hey, we made a mistake by thinking that this company could make a live service game? Or are they saying, oh, this company screwed up? When they say a statement that's as vague as it didn't meet expectations, what does that mean? I would agree that's not what the audience wanted from something like this.
Right. I think it was last year or whenever they announced the delay into 2024. That was a big, giant warning sign for me, because you can't change the way they had made Kill the Justice League at that point, right? They're too close to release. They've already put too much time and effort and money into it. However, them like delaying like they did really kind of sent up a red flag that, oh, this is not going to be, I think, what we want.
Yeah.
And it might be time to temper expectations.
Which is not something that the general public and fanboys at large do very often. But yeah, kind of saying maybe they'll bounce back. I mean, I'm not saying bounce back, but maybe they'll make this game into something that meets expectations or has more content that people want. Maybe that will happen, but it just seems like such a miscalculation. I haven't played it. Let me just say that right off the bat.
Right.
But it just seems like a giant sort of swing and a miss as far as what people want from a game that is a Batman or Justice League game. We'll see what happens in the future and if that DLC fulfills any of those expectations on what it could be. I got off on a tangent there. That's too vague. We deviate and then we come back. I was asking you about your first review code. I got my first review code for a game that I am under embargo. That was exciting, too. It's like, oh, under embargo? Wow, what's that? The game is an adaptation of a board game called Calico, Monster Couch, who is a Polish developer. Their last game that they did that was a board game adaptation was Wingspan. But this one is Quilts and Cats of Calico, which is an adaptation of the board game Calico. So I've been playing that. By the time this episode is published, I'll have that all played and I can talk about it a little bit more. But that was kind of exciting. My very first review code. I was like, woo!
That's exciting.
Yeah, just having the opportunity to do it. I've done beta stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
Long ago, I did PopCap beta testing, and this was before they were purchased by Electronic Arts. Oh, this is another interesting story. Someone on Twitter once just pinged me and said, hey, are you the 3-3 Engimon that was a beta tester for Bejeweled 3? I was like, yeah. It was like, oh, yeah, I was looking through the code and it had your name there. And I just saw that you were available on Twitter and just wanted to ask you some questions about beta testing. I was like, whoa, okay. That came out of left field. They did beta testing where they had a beta group. We just got free copies of the game afterwards. So I did Zuma. I did a whole bunch of other, some of which were released, others which weren't. That was sort of my hobby before, was doing these betas back in the day. Did you ever do any beta work?
You know, I haven't. I will say what was kind of funny when we got our Avengers codes was, in addition, we got on like their press junket list. So like we were interviewing like multiple of their cast members and all that. And
yeah.
In the lead up to it, like I was super pumped for it. And I just remember playing it. My now fiance at the time was like just watching me and could just see like the disappointment just like slowly set in. And like the realization of
yeah, what was it, Anthem.
Yep,
that's what I think of Anthem, because I was so excited for Anthem. Seems like a similar miscalculation on that, like, was done with Kill the Justice League. It was sort of like, is this really what we want?
Yep.
Right, I mean, there are a lot of really cool ambitious things that we want to try here, but it might have been more of a, we're trying to do too much with Anthem. How did you get your start in journalism? You graduated from University of Nevada?
Yeah, so journalism had kind of always been my interest and passion.
Uh-huh.
It really started in middle school. I was living in Green Bay, Wisconsin at the time.
Okay.
And the newspaper, the Green Bay Press Gazette, had this teen section where they would allow teens to write movie and music reviews, and they would reimburse you for either the CD or the ticket. So to be perfectly honest with you, I kind of got started in journalism because I wanted to get some free music or go see a movie for free. I just found that I kind of enjoyed it. Moved out to Las Vegas, took journalism classes in high school and all that. But up in Reno when I went to college was where it really became cemented. I worked my way up to be the sports editor for the student newspaper, you know, just kind of fell in love with the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
Working my first deadline night, which is stressful and just chaotic, but you really kind of find out if this industry is right for you. And I've just fallen in love with it, you know, and after that, took a first job in a little town called Ely, Nevada. I worked for almost 2 years, moved out to Oregon, and then moved back to Vegas to the Review Journal. So it's been bumping around, but it's always been journalism. There hasn't been a plan B.
So where did gaming enter into this? Like, what is an impactful game moment that you have from your history? Is that one of the reasons? Like, what is your trajectory as far as games journalism is concerned?
My first gaming experience was on the Game Boy, actually playing Pokemon Yellow, which is a big reason why that whole franchise has meant so much to me. I was like the perfect kid for them, like the games, the cards, the TV shows. I was all in.
Right.
Gaming journalism had always been kind of on the back of my mind. Of course, we all grew up, you know, with the Kotakus and the IGNs of the world.
Well, we all, you all.
Yeah.
I was Video Games Monthly. But anyway, go ahead.
But as I kind of took the quote unquote traditional journalism route, there just wasn't an opportunity to marry the two.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing things like traditional sports coverage, which I love and had a lot of fun with it. But it wasn't until I got to the Review Journal, who at the time they were expanding their podcast platform and they were open to pitches, and I just kind of was like, well, I might as well shoot my shot. Came over and pitched a gaming podcast that the bosses luckily liked, and they introduced me to my former co-host, Ryan. We'd actually never met before, so that was very fortuitous, and we kind of went from there.
Nice. So it was a job, but then you found a way to take something that you really enjoyed as a hobby and then apply it to that job? Is that
exactly?
Did it work the same for Ryan, or what was his background?
He had been a little more involved in the gaming industry. Like, he streamed before we had done the podcast, and he was part of another podcast that he was doing. But similar, that it was a way for him, at least in a more professional setting, to kind of marry the two.
Yeah. That's very cool that you had that opportunity. So it's been a sort of a recent aspiration, basically, right? You said it was always sort of in the back of your mind, but then recently it's been a lot easier, like with the platform expansion and all that.
That's correct.
What is your current job at the Las Vegas Review Journal? And what does a normal work week look like for Lucas? For you. I'm editing a show right now where someone said, how do you expect me to respond when you respond to me in the third person? And I, you know, it's like, whatever. Okay.
I can also respond to myself in the third person if that helps. Just kidding.
Ben would be appreciative of that, I think. But anyway.
So I'm a social media manager at the Review Journal, but I do kind of a grab bag of duties. So I manage our social media accounts. So on Facebook, X, Instagram, we do a little bit on TikTok, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I am obviously posting story links, but I'm also making graphics and whatnot. In addition, I help to manage our website a little bit. Okay. So keeping new stories up to date on our homepage and whatnot, making sure things post to the web okay. And then I'm also available kind of as an emergency reporter if some big breaking news goes on and we don't have anyone else to kind of grab. I will sometimes be the person to get like an initial post on, and until some of our regular beat reporters can kind of take over and get settled in. And then, of course, LAN parties. So a little bit of podcasting on the side as well.
Do you do any editing?
I'm not technically an editor. However, whenever I do have to post stories, I am kind of like the last eyes of a story before it hits the web. So our web team, we are kind of de facto editors, if that makes sense.
Right. You know, that makes sense. Oh boy. Here are a couple of zingers. Get ready.
Okay. I'm ready.
And I don't know if I should just hold off until when you're on a regular show for this, but if this is too deep, just tell me and we can skip it. What does journalistic integrity mean to you? I mean, what does it mean to you now? And how has your view of that changed over your career? So 10 years or so?
A little over 10 years now. I will say that to me, journalistic integrity means doing your darn best to present the facts without letting personal bias influence how you're presenting the story. How it's evolved really has been a recognition that your personal bias is going to show up in small ways no matter how hard you try. So it's not the absolute perfection, which, you know, coming out of journalism school, we're all wide-eyed and naive and like, yes, you know, we have to be 100% unbiased, just present the facts. That's always the goal. In reality, because we're humans, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But as I've kind of gone on in the industry, as I've seen how journalism has evolved through the years for good and for bad, I still believe in it. Like, I still think it's probably more important now than what I realized coming out of journalism school.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to throw a specific sector under the bus because there are great TV journalists out there. However, I think cable news has done a lot to harm journalistic integrity in a lot of different ways.
It was a double-edged sword, right? With the advent of cable, you had your things like C-SPAN, which brought you these government things that are important. You could watch it for yourself and make your own decisions based on whatever the coverage was of your Senate or your hearings or whatever. That's good. It's when the entertainment part kind of crept in, where it wasn't about reporting the news.
Right.
It was more about reporting the news with your slant or with your perspective. Perspectives are valuable, but they aren't news.
I think if people take a step back, one of the things that I think has changed is, like, you look at the primetime spots for all these different channels, they're talk shows, not newscasts. They may consider themselves reporters, but they're not actually doing any reporting. Mm-hmm. They are bringing on guests to have talking heads to reinforce an opinion or to try and have some sort of balance and the other way, but they are just talking. They're not bringing you any new angles, any new developments. They're regurgitating what has probably by that point been the news the entire day. That is not just in TV, okay? I think in any medium, we're seeing more and more of reporters write or produce works that are echoing what they believe rather than doing a meaningful dive into a particular topic.
Sort of related to that question, your new project.
Yes.
I went to your Kickstarter page for Game On, which is going to be your new periodical that you are developing yourself based on funding. This isn't related to anything having to do with your job. This is going to be a Lucas project.
It is. Completely independent.
Gotcha. On the page, it says the following. As gaming evolves, video game journalism must evolve with it. Game On is the answer. That is the quote from the page. So can you talk a little bit about what that means and how this magazine... Is this going to be a physical magazine or is this going to be an online magazine?
So it's going to be a digital magazine. I'm not opposed to doing a physical run in the future, but as a startup, just getting the added cost to a print run would be kind of cost prohibitive. So digital, definitely to start. As always, I just want to preface this. I'm going to speak in generalities, but there are great video game journalists out there. So I don't want to sound like I'm saying everybody's not doing a great job, because there are some great journalists out there. However, I think what I've noticed is we're seeing complex issues bubble to the surface in the gaming industry, whether it's the layoffs, whether it's some of the allegations of harassment and other workplace condition things, or rather, if it's even something like the Embracer Group buying up a bunch of studios and then deciding to shut a bunch of them down, like stuff like that, that while you can report the daily news on, they deserve like a deeper look into it, that in a lot of these outlets' defense, they just don't have the time or the staff or the budget to do. I think that that is what I'm aiming to focus on, is it's not going to be a battle about the daily news headlines. There are far bigger outlets that can do a far better job than I could. This is about taking a deeper look into the biggest issues facing this industry and trying to provide a fair look into it and just try and further a conversation in a healthy way that hopefully leads to some progress down the road. But it's recognizing that in the gaming industry, it's a very welcoming industry, and I love that about it, right? Every event I've covered, I've never felt anyone hostile toward me or anything like that, so I'm super grateful about that. However, there can at least be the appearance of that friendliness coming with strings attached to not take the hard look at something,
mm-hmm.
and I just think that needs to change, and I think that as Game On grows, how we deliver those stories is also going to change. So beyond the magazine, we're planning podcasts, videos, that kind of stuff, and trying to deliver in-depth stories in the way people take their content in a fair and balanced look. I hope I didn't ramble too much right there.
No. I mean, it's something that I feel is important as far as going back to the roots of true investigative journalism, like that kind of a step back. You want to be open and you want to get all of your data and provide it in a way that has an ethical sort of standard to it.
Mm-hmm.
Here are some things, and here are some people we talked to about possible solutions and what speculations. That is perfectly valid in any kind of investigative journalism, I would say, is, hey, can you XYZ Jeff Keighley or whatever? Can you tell mm-hmm. me how you would solve this situation, or what you would do, or what you would put in place, or go to people who are your experts in the field. That is all excellent investigative journalism, I would say. I am not a journalist major, though, so I don't know if you have other thoughts on what that is, the methods by which. And then also sort of a follow-up or a side question is, why a magazine and why not a book?
I think I'm going the magazine route because it can be a little more regular than a book release.
And adaptive, too. It's like you can respond and it can be a growing organic story as opposed to something where it's in a book and then you have to wait till the next edition.
Correct.
But
Yes. It's funny because on a side note, I am working on a book, and it just takes a longer time, obviously, to get the business side of a book down.
Mm-hmm.
I like the magazine format because it still allows for longer form journalism. But it also, from an economic standpoint, allows for a little more variety in how you're creating revenue. You know, obviously with the book, you're fully dependent on whether it sells or not, and that will decide whether you get another book with a certain publisher. And a magazine, you might have subscribers, you might have like a Patreon set up, you might have some advertisers. So there's just more of a way that you're less dependent on, if this one area doesn't meet expectations, the whole project sinks.
Yeah, points of failure.
Right.
And if you have a variety of sources of income and input, you're more solid. That's very cool. Are you going to start out by just doing it all yourself then? You're putting it all together? Like,
I think initially, yes. I have had some people reach out to me very kindly offering to help. However, I don't want to take them up on them if I can't at least pay some sort of freelance rate. So I need to at least see what the financial side is first, because I just don't want to accept work and not be able to pay them anything. I know what that's like coming up in journalism,
right?
Doing an unpaid internship and all that. It's terrible.
There are plenty of people out there who would do it for free, but at the same time, it's like, would you feel okay with that? No. If you're doing the work, I want to pay you for it because...
Right.
It's valuable.
Yep, 100% agree. Like, I can't promise you how good my freelance rates are going to be, but I want to at least be able to pay you whatever rate I can afford before I accept help.
Yeah, and then also I think there's something to be said for establishing a voice. Your description of what you want to do is kind of lofty.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see it is just go back to the roots of journalism and journalistic integrity, which is the reason why I asked about that up front. It seems like that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to go back to those roots and not go into the clickbaity kind of, this is how we get our views and make our money, is by clicks, as opposed to providing valuable information about an industry that you're passionate about.
You're totally right. I'm probably old-fashioned in my thinking on this, but I will always bet, or maybe hope is the right word, that quality journalism will attract enough attention rather than the clickbait headline that will maybe get you a short-term click but turn off a long-term audience member because they just get frustrated.
Right. Do you have a hat that has a little thing on it that says press?
I don't. I should get one, though. I need a hat with like a feather or something, too.
Exactly, exactly. You gotta get that going for promotion and whatnot. I was going to ask you what your beat was, but we all know that if we're talking about this, your beat is video games.
Yes. Yep.
Is it going to be just video game centric, this magazine? It says Game On. So I'm thinking gaming industry as a whole, but are you also going to veer into, I saw that you had some interest in esports stuff at one point. Is it going to be diversified that way, or is it, we just talking about gaming news in Las Vegas?
There'll definitely be some esports stuff. I'm very lucky living in Las Vegas that Vegas is home to like Evo, the esports awards, and so there's a lot of good esports events. The HyperX Arena out here at the Luxor hosts a lot of events throughout the year, so there will be some esports coverage mixed in. Yeah, diversifying so that gaming kind of is a catch-all when I say it.
That's really exciting. I'm very interested to see what this becomes, because it seems like it can go a number of directions, right? As far as the type of things and catering to what people want to know about the industry or are curious about the industry, maybe a how the sausage is made kind of investigation, maybe not always focusing on problems in the industry, but also some of the good things that happen and why those are valuable.
Yeah, the plan is definitely to highlight the good too, right? Highlight either individuals, highlight success stories for sure.
Yeah, we got a balance, right? I would rather hear both sides, and I want to hear some positives along with, here are the things that we need to do better as an industry. Do you consider yourself a member of the video game industry as someone who's a journalist who focuses on that, or do you not? Do you feel like you're an observer more than a participant?
You know, I've thought about that a lot, and it's a complicated question for me. I feel like being on the journalism side, there's a separation regardless of if I want there to be or not, because I don't have like game development experience or acting experience or anything like that, I definitely don't feel like I'm super ingrained in like that community as much as I would be if I had experience in that. Mm-hmm. However, I will say that every industry event that I've been to and covered, everyone's been friendly, everyone's been respectful. There hasn't been any looking down on you of like, oh, you're from the Review Journal, what are you, you know, that kind of a thing.
That was my thought when I attended my first year as press for PAX West. Mm-hmm. I had interactions with people who had me, you know, I would sign up for whatever presentation they were doing. I'd come in for an appointment and they were expecting me to be this big, which organization, which podcast are you with? And I was like, let me just tell you, I am a small podcast. And they were like, that's fine. That's totally okay. Mm-hmm. I was quite surprised at that too, that I didn't get any sort of negative, like, what are you doing here, Mr. Your aunt is your only listener. Aunt of the pod.
But to answer your question real quick, I guess I would lean yes. Like I do feel like I am in my own unique part of it that's just different than most of it.
Okay, very cool. We're running out of time here. I'm going to just drop my suggestion as far as how to sell magazines, which is a kind of funny swimsuit edition with Greg Miller, Tim Geddes, and Blessing. You would definitely sell magazines that way. Let me just say that.
You know, I might have to talk to Greg and see if that can just be our launch.
I'm sure he would be able to do it. You know what? Honestly, I would love to meet the guy and maybe talk to him at PAX. I don't know if he still goes to PAXs or not, but I'll meet him sometime because I really enjoy his show. It's entertainment. There are stories, but it's pretty clear that these are our opinions about these stories, right?
Right.
And these are our perspectives coming from our love of video games, comics, movies, all these things. It's just, it's really cool that they were able to do that themselves. So,
you know, and I will agree that Greg is a genuinely nice person. I think there's always the fear when you talk to somebody that you're like, oh, I hope you're secretly not a jerk because I really respect what you've done.
That's the thing with like, you never meet your heroes kind of stuff, right?
Right. And I'll say this too, like, so the DICE Summit is in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And the first DICE Summit I covered coming out of the pandemic, oh gosh, I don't know if that was 21 or 22 now, one of those years. But that was the first like gaming industry event that I was covering in person. And so I know that like I was feeling a little nervous, and DICE attracts heads of development studios. So this isn't
right.
This isn't like something that you get to waft into and just kind of wade into and you're like, all right. And it was the pre-award show reception where I had Greg on a little bit before the DICE Summit, and he just walked up to me and just started talking to me like I was just another one of the guys there.
Yeah.
And I think that was like the moment where I'm like, okay, I think I might be okay. Like I think I'm okay.
And it's like, how much of that guy is this persona that he portrays on the show, and how much of it is this guy from Chicago, Chicagoland, that's where he's from, yeah?
Yes.
I'm from a small town called Crystal Lake, Illinois, not to be confused with the slasher Crystal Lake, Illinois. But Portillo's, definitely one of the places I remember when I was back there. Jeez, man, it's small world kind of stuff, right? It's like,
oh yeah.
So anyway, I could go on forever, but let me just wrap it up. Thank you, Lucas. I really appreciate you coming on and letting us know about your latest secret project. Well, not so secret. It won't be secret when this episode is released.
No, I appreciate you having me on to talk. I can't wait to do this again.
Yeah.
And yeah, I loved it.
Thank you so much. And think of a word. I mean, I want to do news because there are some things that I wanted to ask as far as what is news and what isn't news that I think that you as a journalist, gaming or otherwise, would have a very unique perspective on. I have opinions as someone who consumes this kind of media and does my own research about it and so on and so forth. How do you balance this? You maintain a voice when you're writing as a journalist, but you also need to have your integrity and provide information. So it's really a fascinating subject for me.
I would love to do news. I would love to talk about everything you just brought up. I would love to talk about the rise of influencers and the now complicated relationship that they have to with breaking stories. There's a lot to get into that I would love to spend some time with you chatting. So I'm ready when you are.
All right. Well, thank you, Lucas. Look at the show notes. We'll have all the information about the Kickstarter, about Game On! Exclamation point. Punctuation is important.
as you
well know. So thanks, Lucas. You have a wonderful day. And thank you, audience, for joining us. We'll see you later. All right, we're back. What did you think of the interview?
Well, actually, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it because I don't remember.
I was so excited. Once I had it all edited, I sent it to about a dozen people because I wanted it to be perfect. You know what I mean?
It was great.
I thought it sounded pretty good and natural, and it was more of a conversation sounding, which is what I like to achieve. You know, there are interviewers that their style is kind of give them the question, wait for them to answer. Give them the next question, wait for them to answer.
Well, as we know, your podcast is too vague.
Yes.
So you don't want to be that specific.
I have a tendency to veer off into uncharted territory from time to time. I like to thank David Letterman for teaching me my interview skills.
You think?
I think so, because I watched the show an awful lot back in the day.
Mm-hmm. He was always my favorite.
Yeah, likewise. Hard to believe, isn't it, folks? The embargo has lifted on the game Quilts and Cats of Calico. It is now live on Steam's page, so you can get it there. It's going to be coming out, I think, towards the end of the quarter on the Nintendo Switch, so that's also an option. Quilts and Cats of Calico is a game that's based off of the board game Calico. It is put out by Monster Couch. They do board game adaptations. Their last two projects have been that, so let's get into the review portion of the program. As we talked about on the review show, what I have is a very simple formula, which is the way I'm going to be experimenting this year with reviewing things. I break it down into three categories: audio visuals, game mechanics, and story and narrative. And that makes up my video game experience. I probably won't do the rankings in the audio portion, but I will put them in the show notes as far as what I think and all that. So we'll start with the audio visuals. The main game's graphics are very similar to the original graphics from the game Calico, but it does have a distinctness to it. Super cute. Definitely fits the cozy country home sort of category. Even the different little decorations around your table when you're playing give that homey feel. Absolutely complements the game perfectly. The songs and background music fits the theme and the mood very well. Top-notch quality game music, but not enough after playing this game for 20 hours. Kind of got sick of the music, but I was able to remedy that by putting some 80s new wave on in the background while I was playing it. I can have my own music. The graphic style of the main game versus the story mode are different enough to where it was sort of a little bit jarring. The painted backgrounds, they were great. They were animated well. It kind of threw me off while I was playing through, because the game itself matches the overall as it is. But then separate are these little storyboard things that tell you the story that are completely different art style.
Which you'll tell me about when you start talk about story, right?
Yes. I had only one minor graphic sort of problem. The cats, when they roam around, you've got a little button that you can wake up the cats, and then they'll walk around and lay down on your quilt as you're trying to put it together. And then you can click on the button again, and they'll go to the top and they'll sleep. Well, you can't detect where their object's placed, so a cat can fall asleep inside a three-dimensional object kind of thing, and like part of their body's sticking out, which... It's not horrible, but it bothers me. So I just have to hit it a whole bunch more times to make sure that they go to a place where it's empty. So that's the only problem I had with that. It would really be cool if they knocked over stuff, I think. That
yes,
would be definitely.
Would.
Yeah. And maybe just curl onto the quilt and start licking themselves.
Yeah.
On the Steam page, someone said, these cats look uncanny valley. I was like, have you ever seen a cat in real life? They're kind of uncanny valley, naturally. I disagree. I think it's just the style, the country home style. It fits in with that. You can also create and dress up your own cats that you will use for your different goals, the cat goals that I'll explain in the game mechanics section. So the first thing I did when I got my copy, you can guess what I did. The first thing, right?
Dress up taco. Look for a taco cat.
Well,
costume.
I did. Hey guys at Monster Couch, a taco costume definitely be amazing. I created Mango and Bash. That's what I did.
Of course,
that was the first
of course.
Thing. I wish there were more customization options for the cats. I'm probably in the minority there, but that is the audiovisual section. The game mechanics, as far as I can tell, for the most part, the game mirrors the board game exactly in every way. If you start a local or online game, three bonus cats are selected at random, and their pictures in a little picture frame appear on the screen and tells you below their bonus information. Those are placed to the left of the quilt card that you receive, which is what you're going to put your design goal hexes on. There are three spaces for those design goal hexes. You choose. I see you raising your hand.
Yes.
Yes, miss.
When you talk about hexes, have you mentioned that the quilt pieces that you're using are hexagonal?
I haven't mentioned that yet, but I will. You are randomly given a quilt board, which contains a 5x5 orientation of fillable hexes. So 25 hexes are free. Hexagonal grid. Would you call that a grid? You probably wouldn't, right? But it's
tessellation. Grid is good.
Yeah. The way it's kind of staggered, the way if you had hexagons strung together in a 5x5 orientation, that's basically what it is. And you've got six places all around each hex, right?
Right.
There are three places on your board for design goal hexes. You'll select three of four of them to place on your quilt card. Once you've placed each one, you have two random hex pieces from the bag of tiles, a total of 108 pieces. There's six different colors, and each will have three of a single pattern of six different patterns on them. 18 total pieces.
Okay, so the green piece will have three polka dot pieces.
Yes.
Three striped pieces,
yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
And so on and so on. Yep. See, that's a much better way of putting it instead of just trying to...
It's hard to...
To articulate.
Yeah.
Once each player has two tiles to play from, three random tiles are removed from the bag and placed in a draw pool, which is a public draw pool as you go through your turn. They're placed to the left of the bag. The gameplay loop is you place one of your two tiles on the board, you draw one of the three tiles that's displaying as your next tile that you're going to place on the board, and then you replace that missing tile with one from the bag, right? Design goal hexes. How can I explain the design?
Do you mean the AAABB?
Correct. Yes. Earlier, you pick your design goal hexes and you put them on your board. You have three spots for those design goal hexes. Everyone has the same three hexes, but people will pick different ones depending on what they want to do. Each one has a goal. For example, AABBCC. That means there have to be two of the same color pattern for A. BB is two of the same color or pattern that are different than the A. And then CC, there's 2 point values assigned to your design goal. One is if you fulfill the pattern goal and not the color goal, or the color goal and not the pattern goal, you get a lower score. And the higher score you'll get when you get both goals, both the patterns and the colors, will give you the higher point score. Does that make sense to you, Nora?
Yes, it does. It took a little while playing for it to make sense. I went for color because that was the easiest. And I just didn't think about the other thing till the next time I played it. And then I started thinking about the patterns too.
Yep. And so that's one thing that you're trying to do to score points, right, is the pattern goals. But then also you're trying to do the cats pairing on the left-hand side, which each have their own specific goal. Usually it's orientation of tiles, like a triangle of three. That's one example. Or a line of four, mm-hmm, or three or more. Each cat has two patterns below them. Not colors, patterns. And those patterns, if you fulfill the goal on the cat card that has that pattern, let's say three or more polka dots, then you get a cat button, which is worth the amount of points it shows on the cat card. The more difficult the orientation, the more points you get. Okay, so you had the pattern to get points, but you also have colors. Now, if you string three of the same color together, you get a color button for that color. If you do that for every single color in your six colors on your board, you get 3 points for each, but then you'll also get a rainbow button, which gives you another 3 points. So those are the three primary ways to score. That's basically it. You play until you're done with your tiles when everyone has their...
You fill
your quilt.
Yeah.
You've completed your quilt.
And it is a crazy quilt.
It is. It is a crazy quilt. We don't put any smallpox on there and give them to...
Never mind.
The whole concept of the game, very well thought out. I mean, just the original game idea is great.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
Each game lasts, I would say, this is my approximate, because I've played against AI opponents and they immediately move, whereas with people, they don't immediately move.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have found that per person, it generally takes 10 to 15 minutes per person is the length of a game.
Unless you spend a lot of time thinking about where you're going.
That's why I say average, on average, right? Some people take shorter time than others.
Right, right.
Not everyone's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
Like Nora.
Hey, I'm thinking it through.
Well, I know. It was to be expected. It was, you know, your first time playing too. So
right.
If you play online, it's a 3-player game. So 2 players... on Steam and yourself, you just get randomly paired up with them. If there are no real players available, they'll put in an AI player to substitute. And then each turn, you've got 3 minutes to move. If you don't move within 3 minutes, you're kicked out of the game.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
No. That's not during the game where we're playing, right?
Yeah.
That's an online game because you want to police those. You don't want to have to kick people from the game.
Yeah, I understand.
But yeah, that would be funny if just got kicked out.
Click.
Yep. Now, the last part, story and narrative. And this is me summarizing the story based on what I played through the quote unquote story. But
question.
Yes.
I don't know anything about the story part of it, right? Is that correct?
Yes. You do not.
Good. Then you can tell me.
Okay. I mean, spoiler alert, I'm going to spoil the story of Quilts and Cats of Calico, but that's not the part of the game that's the important part, really. But if you want to skip, go ahead and skip. In the kingdom of Scratchington, where magical cats bring good tidings, allegedly, your father has disappeared, but not before teaching you the basics of being a sewist. You know, that's what they call them now, right?
A what is?
A sewist. It's the version of seamstress.
That kind of sewist. S-E-W. Yes.
Oh, you mean like seeds? Is that what you were thinking?
No.
Sewist. No.
Sewist.
Yeah.
S-E-W.
That seems to be the one that most people, the gender neutral sewist.
Interesting. Yeah. Yep.
But anyway, 5 years later, you're ready to venture out into Tom Kitty City to make some money with the skills you have been given. You start with a visit to Aunt Agatha's, who fills you in on potential clients around town during the days leading up to the Feline Festival. And that's it. That's basically it.
Okay.
That's where you start, and it doesn't really go to any interesting places or whatever. Spoiler alert, you find your father. But I mean, it seems like that was sort of an afterthought. It wasn't part, you know, making it a story wasn't part of what they designed the game to do. So it seems like it was retrofitted. A story mode could have been an interesting story, but I don't know how you would tell that in this whole, you know, you give people puzzle scenarios.
Yeah.
The town is represented by a quilt, and you have a little quilting cart.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a little tiny house quilting cart.
Yeah.
You click on a spot, and it'll wheel to the place, and then that's when the story bits happen. And then you go from town to town, quilt to quilt, to do various things. There are people who are on the front line. There's apparently a war going on.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I don't know what it's about. I'm not sure it's about cats. It's just war.
Who's the best quilter?
No, it's not
country?
That kind of, it's
what
not that kind of war. Quilt war.
Yeah,
those quilters can be really cutthroat.
They can.
That's what I heard.
Watch out for those needles.
Yeah, these missions, like for the tutorial, you played through the tutorial, right?
Yes.
You'll have one AI opponent. That's one of the possible missions that you get in story mode. As far as I can tell, I completed the main story. It doesn't really do anything. It doesn't unlock anything. It doesn't give you any kind of like extra things. It like I said, it just feels like it's sort of an afterthought.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to like if you would have called it instead of a story mode, a challenge mode, then that kind of lets you do these challenge things and
right.
It's not, you know what I mean? It's not a story. You don't have to try and force a story into it.
Okay. So you're thinking the story mode could have been left out.
It could have been left out.
But maybe even gone to something like you're saying a challenge mode or something like that.
And you could use those assets and stuff for the challenge mode too. I mean, it's not like it is not necessarily needed. My last portion here, the three ups, three downs. The ups, we've got pass and play, which Nora and I did, which is cool. Although, if I'm being honest, I would rather play the board game. I think it's like having your own board and it would be fun in a party. But pass and play is not something that you see a lot of anymore. So I was very surprised and happy that they put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
My second up is it's one of these easy to learn, difficult to master kind of games. You just played through two rounds and you pretty much picked it up.
I beat him. I just thought I'd say that.
By one point. Come on. I let you win. No.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't care. It's just about having fun. Really.
Yeah, exactly. How I play.
It's complex enough to hold your attention, but it's simple enough that it doesn't alienate people who want a simple game. Like once you play through one, you pretty much can pick it up. It's pretty easy.
Right. And you don't need to play for 52 hours to complete
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's not like Axis and Allies or anything.
Yeah.
Or Risk.
I hate Risk.
Okay. There you go.
Tom loved it. He was my husband before he died.
Yes, he was. This is the way life works, Nora. That's
I know.
Yeah. For those people out there who don't know, my three downs. Okay. So this is one that I noticed while I was trying to show Nora how to play. There is no setting to change the text size. When you mouse over the design goal, it has some details there, which I was able to tell you what they meant, and then you kind of figured the pattern out from there, but you weren't able to read it because the text was so small.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my negatives. There's no sort of settings that you can use to change the text size or the messages size or any of the text on the game, it seems. Like I said, in the music section, there are only three or four songs that play as you play the game. So they can get repetitive if you play multiple games over and over again. But like I said, easily remedied by, you know, zipping.
Putting
your own music in the background.
Yeah.
Right. The graphic style. The main game versus the story was a little bit jarring. Could have been by intention because it looks like the little characters and cats that seems to be drawn in the style. So like each avatar. So I asked you to pick an avatar, mm-hmm. which was a cat. And I picked an avatar, which was a cat. But it was drawn in the style of story mode or close to it,
oh,
it
okay.
seemed like. It, to me, it was just a little jarring and
Okay.
And then, as a side note, story mode, not as robust as I would have hoped. It's not really much of a story. You could probably call it a challenge mode, but you would need to put more in there for it to be truly a challenge mode.
Right.
But yeah, but other than that.
Put some bosses in there?
Oh, yeah. You do fight a weaving machine.
Ah.
A weaving machine in a warehouse. This is how badly the story is just kind of all over the place.
Whatever.
But let me just say, game, super fun. Really love playing it. Love playing it online. Nora, your thoughts as a first-time player?
Well, no. First of all, a question.
Yeah.
What ages would you say could play, should play this?
Yeah.
I think it can go pretty young. I'm not thinking about five-year-olds.
It varies on the child, but yeah.
Sure.
Let me look and see, because I know I had let me see what the Calico says. I mean, they say it's a family game. Ages 10 and up is what they say.
When I said 8, I was thinking 8 or 10 or something like that.
That's very, very smart.
It's not like a kid's game like, this is so simple. Yeah. It's a logic game.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so you need to think, not just one thing. Like when I first started, I was just thinking color. I got to match color. But there's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
But it's something that, 8 or 10, your 10-year-old.
Right.
Could figure out probably faster than us guys.
8 or 10 years old. There's the problem with it's a girly game. Maybe they're being brought up a little bit differently nowadays, but Quilts and Cats seems to be like you would think that a kid would think that's girl stuff, but it's not. I like cats, so already I'm in the cats and quilts area, but just the logic part of it and the fact that you're making a quilt out of these little pieces, it makes sense. Thematically, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not a game for a specific gender or whatever.
Right. I didn't think of that at all.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to focus on that. It's like, it's a game. It's fun. Let's play it. Right. And hopefully one day, Michaela will invite me over. And like I said on the previous show where I bought a game based on the strength of the first 3 hours, I bought the board game based on the strength of Quilts and Cats of Calico, which I think was the right idea, the right decision, because she's a board game geek kind of person. So
I could definitely see playing the board game.
Oh yeah, I would prefer playing the board game because there's a lot of interaction that you have that goes beyond you just sitting in front of your computer and focusing on that. Right. So definitely worth playing if you like board games, logic puzzles, things like that.
Right. And I did enjoy playing. Sometimes I get frustrated at the beginning of games, learning games.
Yeah. Is that why you swore at the screen?
No, I didn't swear at the screen. I probably swore at somebody around me.
Oh,
I don't
maybe.
I don't know. But I do get frustrated. But this one, it didn't last too long for this one. Basically, that went away.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything that stayed. I enjoyed it.
What did you think of the tutorial? I played through the tutorial when I did my testing of the game back when it was the online testing for the beta, so I didn't play it again. Was it adequate? Was there more that they needed to add there? Did it confuse you at all?
No, I think it was pretty good.
Okay.
Some of it, I think I just took very basic instructions, and then they had you play a simple game. They had you moving pieces around and things like that. And I think there were some things that they did explain that I kind of ignored. But then when we played the game for real, and you explained like the patterns that the cats on the left side have to do, then I understood it. I had already played and I didn't need a big explanation.
Right, right.
So,
It's very easy to pick up, I think.
Yes, so, yes it is.
And a lot of fun to play. And I'll probably, like I said, continue playing it.
Yeah.
So once again, thank you, Krisik of Monster Couch. Thank you for the review code and everyone at Monster Couch and the people who created this game. Simple to learn, lifetime to master kind of category is what I would put it into. The original designer is Kevin Russ. Also, the illustrations, her name is Beth Solo.
Interesting.
So that is our episode.
I enjoyed playing and I could see myself playing alone without an opponent just for, just try and better my score.
This also seems like it's perfect for if they get a version for the Switch, which has a touch screen, I can't see them not putting this on pads, because it definitely seems to me like it's something for the iPads that would be perfect. It would just be drag and drop your
Right. I kept trying to do that on your computer when we were doing it on your laptop. Yeah. I kept trying to point to the...
Oh, that's why the fingers are all over there.
Right.
Maybe if they still had those fingerprint sensors on your phone, I could open up your phone with the fingerprint.
Oh, yeah. You could. Yeah.
All weird. But anyway. So thank you for at gunpoint playing this game.
No, no.
I know you're a games person, and I thought you would enjoy this.
And this is the kind of game that I play. It was good.
Well, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of the Too Vague Podcast. My name is Ben.
And I'm Nora.
And we've been your hosts. Have a wonderful night. Bye.
Bye.